Fully charged, renewables and storage powering Australia is a new Climate Council report which shows that Australia is on the cusp of a reliable renewable energy future. To talk over the issues raised in the report, I'm speaking to Professor Andrew Stock, Climate Councillor and Energy Expert. Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning.
Where are we now in the timeline of clean energy and battery storage?
Well, I think we're well into the journey, but we've got a long way to go. Battery storage, is at the start of that journey, but we think, and this report makes it clear, based on the analysis we've done, that it's on the cusp of a boom, that is storage. If we think back to where solar PV for households were, say, about a decade ago, a little more, you could count the number of people across Australia that had household PV, in the thousands or maybe the tens of thousands. But today, there's 1.7 million Australian households have got solar PV, and, it's still an industry that's growing very rapidly. Well, what this report says is that batteries are at the same point that solar was, around 10 years ago. The costs of batteries are coming down dramatically. They've come down 80% since 2010, and they're forecast to come down another 50% again by 2025. So dramatic fall in costs and really great opportunities to see the market grow dramatically in the years ahead.
How significant is the increased pairing between clean energy and battery storage?
Batteries are a really good fit for the sort of renewable energy future we need to have in this country. They're a good fit because they can operate at all sorts of levels. They can operate at grid scale, and we've seen that in South Australia already with the operation of the new Tesla battery, the 100 megawatt battery up at Hornsdale wind farm. But people that have installed batteries at their household level, have seen what batteries can do at a very small scale, and that's quite dramatic too. So at the grid scale, big impacts, and at the household level, big impacts are too when you add it up across, the hundreds of thousands of houses potentially that could install battery with their solar systems in the future.
Now, first we had household storage. Now we're moving towards grid scale. How did that jump happen?
What happened really, Des, is that the sort of battery system that people can install in their house has changed. Technology's now dominated by lithium-ion battery systems for household storage. It's not the only technology that's there, but it's the one that shows, I think, very great prospects for cost reductions and further growth, much faster growth in the future. What happens is that those battery systems at the household level are made up of little cells, the same sorts of cells that you might have in an appliance that's rechargeable, but they couple them up many, many times, and that creates the storage capacity at the household level. And at the grid scale, what happens is that those systems are just coupled up many, many more times. Obviously, there's more controls and probably a lot more safety features and a lot more software. But essentially, that's the beauty of this technology. It's very scalable. It can be deployed very quickly. And it's incredibly responsive to market needs. So as we decarbonize our electricity grid, which is critically important for Australia, we have one of the worst polluting electricity grids in the modern world. And our power stations, the old fossil fuel ones, are getting very old. As we decarbonize that grid with renewable energy, we all understand that renewable energy is variable. Well, storage in particular and batteries as a subset of that have got a very important role to play in allowing that renewable energy, wind and solar thermal, possibly other forms, to be able to be supplying our power when we need it every day of the year at any time.
So could you go through the different sorts of storage that are now being developed?
So in Australia, we mainly hear about two sorts of storage, I think, and possibly three. The first is the ones we've just been talking about, that's battery storage. And obviously, when you have the largest grid-scale battery storage system in the world installed in your state in South Australia, which we have here, that gets a bit of discussion. That gets a bit of commentary, not just locally, but around the world. That is a leading position globally for South Australia. But other sorts of storage that are being talked about, we've heard probably about Snowy 2.0. It's a multi-billion dollar proposal to add around 2,000 megawatts of what's called pump storage to the Snowy Hydro scheme. Now, that's not the only pump storage scheme that's around, and pump storage is when you effectively use an existing or a new reservoir system to move water up and down depending on what the availability of cheap electricity is in the grid. So when electricity is cheap, you pump water uphill, and when it's expensive, you let the water run downhill through a turbine and generate power. I guess we've also heard perhaps that around South Australia, there's been a couple of proposals at least that have been talked about, one over on Eyre Peninsula, you know, one on Upper Spencer Gulf on the other side of the Gulf, and, you know, one in the Adelaide Hills using an old quarry. And there are others being looked at on the eastern seaboard, Tasmania, up in Queensland, on an old gold mine pit. And so people are starting to think about this. So they're probably two that rely on existing technologies or emerging technologies. And the third is, we tend to hear about here in South Australia, is related to solar thermal storage, which is the project up at Port Augusta. Again, it would be a world-leading power project, renewable power project, and by storing heat and then reconverting that heat into ultimately electricity, that project will be able to provide electricity, again, pretty well when we want it, any time of the day or year. So there are three sorts of storage that are available at a grid scale. There are other technologies, you know, converting surplus renewables into hydrogen and then reconverting that to electricity is another one we've heard a little bit about recently, and there are others as well, but probably the ones I've mentioned are the main three or four that are in the current, I guess, public discussion.
What's been the trends in terms of costs and also volume for both renewables themselves and storage on a domestic level and a grid level?
So as I mentioned earlier, we've got 1.7 million households now have solar PV on their rooftop. And in fact, this industry is still growing very rapidly. I think January saw one of the highest, if not the highest, month for solar PV installs at a household level and also in commercial premises now. Businesses are looking increasingly at insulating themselves from the pricing that comes off the grid from fossil-fueled energy. So it's still an industry growing very rapidly. You know, South Australia leads the nation in terms of per capita number of solar PVs installed on houses, but we have a smaller population than other states like Queensland and so forth. So we're not the highest in absolute numbers, but on a per capita basis, we still are. That's solar PV for households and business. And then what we're starting to see now with battery systems is an acceleration in uptake. So in 2016, there were around 6,700 systems installed across Australia at household level. But in 2017, the estimates are that tripled to around 20,000. So that's a tripling in a year, and costs are coming down. As I said earlier, they've come down around 80% since 2010, and they're still getting cheaper. The technologies are getting better. So we expect, along with the continued uptake of solar PV, for it almost to become the norm now to install a battery system with a solar PV system. And at the domestic level, you can do that for probably in the range of $10,000 to $15,000. That's PV and batteries. Maybe a little bit more if you choose a bigger battery system. But, you know, with that sort of system, on most days, you can run most of the needs of your house 24 hours a day. And a real benefit for this technology, you know, solar and battery systems at household or business level, is that if the grid goes down, and I'm not talking about, you know, statewide blackouts, I'm really talking about the sorts of interruptions that happen much, much more often as a result of storm damage. We saw that up in Queensland, we've seen it in Victoria, you know, where tens or hundreds of thousands of people lose power because the grid goes down at the distribution level. Well, if you've got a battery system coupled up with solar and you make the right choices about what you choose to run in your house, you can run your house effectively independent of the grid almost continuously until the grid comes back, and a seamless transfer depending on the technology. So batteries coupled with solar PV, I think we will see a great deal more of them deployed in Australia. But I guess there's the other thing we've got to have is the right sort of policy, and maybe we can touch on that.
Okay, I was just going to move on to that. Sort of compared to the various political jurisdictions around Australia, what sort of policy settings are being put in place?
Well, I guess won't comment specifically on any political issues. You know, we're heading into an election campaign in South Australia. We've already got the Tasmanians on the way through their election campaign, and there are others coming up this year. But if we look at what's going on at state level, you know, each of the states have got different initiatives. South Australia, I guess, would say, on the basis of the facts, is a leading state when it comes to initiatives for the energy transition to renewables, certainly in terms of renewable energy, in terms of grid-scale storage, and also now in terms of applying that storage technology at the household level with recent announcements. All of these are leading initiatives, not just in Australia, but almost on a global scale. So South Australia is doing a great job, and now we're seeing other states following New South Wales to a degree, but particularly Queensland, Victoria, with renewable targets for their states, storage initiatives, projects happening, and likewise the ACT. But I guess where things are falling down is at a federal level, really. We're seeing the federal government promoting its National Energy Guarantee. Well, the modelling that was done for that, for the Energy Security Board and released last year, showed that, you know, under that National Energy Guarantee, with the emissions target that the paper released just on Thursday this week makes clear, is that that target of a 26 to 28% reduction in emissions by 2030 for the electricity sector, that target will be locked in. So it won't matter if the government changes, the target won't be able to be changed. That's the federal government's proposal. Well, what that means, based on the Energy Security Board modelling that was released, is that there will be virtually no new renewable energy built in Australia, large scale, between 2020 and 2030. So we're currently seeing a lot being built, big wind farms, big solar farms, and they're being built on the basis of the renewable energy target. Well, that renewable energy target, that federal legislation, that caps out in 2020. And we, as a nation, notwithstanding the skeptics and comments and claims that it wouldn't be met by 2020, all the projections are that that renewable energy target for 2020 will be met well ahead of time. There's a huge amount of building going on of renewable projects now. That building and those thousands of people employed is going to come to a halt, because under the National Energy Guarantee, very little new renewables for over a decade. And that really flies in the face of what's going on globally. And the other thing it does is it puts the heavy lifting, frankly, it shifts the heavy lifting from the electricity industry, which under the NEG, that guarantee will see us as a nation continuing to rely heavily on coal and gas, fossil fuels and old power plants that are supposed to be reliable. That's the plan, but they're not. Increasingly forcing us as a nation to rely on that rather than the way the rest of the world is going, which is really a dramatic uptake in the use of renewable energy. I mean, now, in terms of new power investment for electricity around the world, renewables dominate, and they've dominated fossil fuels now in terms of capacity and investment for, you know, the best part of half a decade. So it's about time, really, we had some federal leadership. States are leading. Maybe that's the way it's going to be. Maybe we just need to accept that while we live in a federation, it's a federation of states. States are showing leadership when it comes to the energy transition. AEMO can provide a bit of help and assistance to make sure that that transition is well managed in a way that, you know, doesn't cause upsets, but I guess one would have to question, based on a design of a scheme that, you know, calls for virtually no new large-scale renewables for over a decade into the future, when that is so contrary to world global trends and the imperatives of addressing climate change, really one has to question the validity and efficacy of that sort of federal leadership, because I don't think you can call it leadership when you look at it on the basis of the facts.